There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Dope Black Podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Dope Black Dads Podcast. I'm Marcus Ramterhull. Today, I am joined by a Grammy-nominated musician, Pierce Freelon. So he's a musician, author, educator, politician. We're going to have to get into that at some point as well in this talk. But before we do that, massive shout out to Marissa Young Folkies on Instagram, who saw a post I put out about my first Dope Black Dads podcast and say, you need to get this guy on the show. And I must confess, prior to that, I wasn't aware of your work, Pierce, and then it just opened up this amazing world and body of work. So huge props to Marissa. Thank you for the recommendation. And a huge welcome to you, Pierce.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you, Marissa. Good looking out.
Yes. And if anyone else has got any recommendations out there, you know, we do listen, you know, chuck your comments in and let us know. So as I said, Pierce, naive of me to not know your work until Marissa tuned me in. But so much cool stuff. So I guess we start with your music output. I've been listening to your albums nonstop and absolutely loving them. Just tell us a bit about your music and your style of music.
My music comes from my parenting. I think I'm, you know, like a lot of parents, raising kids is a creative pursuit. And for me, you know, I'm a musician, I'm an artist. I have a open antenna to receiving like sing-songy ideas. And sometimes it's very practical. It'll like literally today, I was dropping my daughter off at school and you know, she's got her backpack on. She kind of rushed into the car and I'm like, click, click, you know, buckle your seatbelt. And Click, Click is a song that we wrote like probably 10 years ago, trying to get them to clickety, clickety, click, clickety, click. Click, you know, just like it's a way to encourage them to do the things and a way to respond. It's like a creative response. There's a song on my album DAD called Gather Your Clothes. You know, it's just about go pick up your stuff off the ground. And, you know, when you frame it like a demand, you know, it feels like a chore. But when you make it a song, it's like, gather your clothes, put them with dip, what you go. Hey, like now all of a sudden the chore is a party and the kids are like, you know, dropping stuff in the hamper to a beat. And this before it became a song, it was literally just beatboxing, gather your clothes and put them with dip, what you go. You know, like, and this was a part of my parenting practice. It was, you know, with not necessarily any intentions of ever producing an album or releasing a song. It was just a tool that I used to motivate my children to do the things and to remember stuff. You know, when you put stuff in melody, when you repeat things like a chorus, it like sears onto their cerebral cortex. And, you know, it became something that the more I tinkered with it and produced around it and explored creatively, I found there's a lot of other parents out there with whom these songs resonate and who also have their own little unique, nuanced ways of parenting. And yeah, so I give all the credit to my kids and to my dad as well for kind of inspiring this, you know, unique way of parenting that seems to have really, you know, resonated.
And how do your kids respond to knowing that that's your kind of world, that's your profession, you're creative, it's very different, I suppose, to maybe a lot of other parents out there they might be interacting with? How do they find that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. My mom is a jazz vocalist, so I grew up in a creative family as well. And, you know, I didn't realize that my parents' occupation was unusual until, like, college. You know what I mean? Like, I'm the only parents my kids have ever known, so they don't think it's weird that I go on tour, that I, you know, write songs. I don't know. Maybe they assume every parent is is like their dad. And, you know, I can only speak from my own experience. I remember going to college and meeting kids who had more traditional backgrounds. And I mean, high school a little bit too, but it's kind of like, you know, this is the world that they know. So it isn't weird to them yet. They don't have much to compare it to. But I do think the way that I take ideas out of thin air and, you know, create just kind of a song out of it, I think that is a practice that has been really an important part of my parenting. And I see my kids do the same thing. You know, they're sponges. They watch us and they mimic our, you know, practices. And this is one where I've seen my kids kind of come up with their own songs, or they'll be beatboxing, or now they're old enough to be on TikTok. So, you know, they'll show me videos like, oh, dad, this is like that thing that you do. Or here, check out this artist who makes like little 30-second songs. Like, that's really cool. And so they're beginning, as they age, especially since they've been on social media, you know, just dipping their toes in, it's kind of expanded the universe of possibility that they're exposed to, and they're drawing connections to the way that we parent and the things that we create in this household. So it's been pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, I also grew up in a creative household. So, you know, it is the way that we were raised. So I don't think it's clocked in yet that it's different or how different it is from other families.
Yeah, and I think kids tend to be just more accepting of, yeah, that's just the reality, isn't it? I know for my children when they were younger and they started school or were in school, I remember there's always a moment where you suddenly realize everyone has clocked that you're on television or you're on whatever, and they're like, the parents are kind of looking at you in a very different way to what they did before, and you can hear them saying to kids, is Emily's dad in that TV show? And like, yeah. And the kids know, and they're just like, yeah, that's his job, just like you're a paramedic, and just like, you know, you work in this place. They're just like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what, that's what we do. Yeah. And they're just like, yes, yeah, that's the world we live in. You mentioned, you know, your kids are a bit older now. I can see behind you some artwork for Daddy Daughter Day.
Oh, yeah,
the opening track of the first record.
Book.
Yeah, oh, it's a book.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Oh, do you know what? I was going to ask you about the track. Tell me about the book.
Oh, well, the stories are kind of parallel. You know, Daddy Daughter Day started as a song. And, you know, it was one of those days where my son, you know, who's real sociable and makes friends very easily, and, you know, every weekend it's like he's got an invitation to a birthday party or a play date. My daughter is more introverted, and she's not, I wouldn't call her quiet, because when she's here, she's just nonstop talking. But I think in social settings, she's less, you know, kind of charismatic than my son. And so, you know, it was one of those days where he was at a play date and she was with me. And So let's make it a fun day. You know, we got ice cream, and I run a studio in Durham where we mentor like black teens, teach them how to make music and record and produce. And so I brought her by, the studio is called Black Space. So I brought her by Black Space, and we were just like having fun. We set up a MIDI controller. She's tapping the beats out. And, you know, I was like, hey, it's a daddy-daughter day. And just like, you know, my click your seatbelt song or my pick up your clothes song, it was like, daddy-daughter day, it's a daddy-daughter day. Ah, daddy-daughter day, it's a daddy-daughter day. Came up with the melody, and she's like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It was just completely organic, completely like an activity to keep her busy, to keep her engaged, something fun to do while her brother's out having fun with his friends. And what came out of it was this really kind of beautiful ditty. And, you know, I got my, called my buddy up, Joshua Gunn, who's a father of two and a great MC. And I was like, man, you got to put a verse on this, bro. Like, let's do it. So we recorded our verses and produced the track, and Daddy Daughter Day. That was the first single from my first children's music album entitled DAD. And, you know, it just kind of, it really resonated with people. The video was just beautifully shot, and it's me and our daughters, you know, my daughter and Josh and his daughter, you know, just at the park playing tennis, having fun. And, you know, we got this big NPR story about the album, and they played the song, and then we got invited onto the Today Show, which was really cool. And then, you know, book publisher, Little Brown Books for Young Readers, reached out like, have you ever thought about making a children's picture book? And I hadn't thought about it. It was just, it was literally like a fun activity with me and my daughter. But, you know, as I got into the children's book space, you know, seeing that there aren't a lot of children's books by male authors. There aren't a lot of children's books by black male authors. You know, just like in children's music, where there's this children's space, you know, we don't have a lot of representation. So I think that's one of the reasons why it resonated so much. And, you know, so I got with Little Brown. I have a 2-book deal with them, and Daddy Daughter Day was the first. There'll be another book coming out next year called Daddy and Me Side by Side, about me and my son going on a camping trip. And so, yeah, these are just these kind of really natural, effortless abundance that has poured out of my decision to invest my creative energies in this children's space. And it's really helped fill a void, as you know, as media makers, storytellers. It's really important for us to tell our stories, because you know, as black fathers, as you know, there's a lot of narratives out there about us, and you know, we're not always the authors of those narratives. So I think it's really important and really dope to take the reins of our own stories and to tell them beautifully, loudly, and abundantly. And there's a lot of brothers out there doing it. I remember right before Daddy Daughter Day came out, there was a short film called Hair Love, which had just won an Oscar. And it was written by and directed by Matthew Cherry, the short. It was based on a children's book that he also released with Vashti Harrison as the illustrator. And, you know, won the Oscar, telling the story about this dad doing his daughter's hair. And it wasn't like the father figures that I was used to seeing, you know, depicted. First of all, they're not many, you know, positive yeah. black father figures in the media. But, you know, I grew up watching Cosby Show, and I grew up with like Fresh Prince, you know, his Uncle Phil. They always seem like these kind of elderly kind of professional, you know, he's a judge or he's a doctor. Here in Hair Love, there's like this young black guy, he's got locks, he has a tattoo. I was like, yo, that's me. Like, I've never seen like a young brother dad depicted in like a Disney-like setting. It was mind-boggling and beautiful and authentic and rich. And it really resonated. I had written Daddy Daughter Day at that point, but I had not released it. And it was just an affirmation that like, oh, now is the time to step up with our stories and to fill the vacuum around narratives of Black fatherhood, you know, with positive, affirming, you know, beautiful storytelling. And the other thing that happened around the same time Hair Love came out was close to when Kobe Bryant and Gigi Bryant died tragically in the helicopter crash. And that was another really rare instance where a prominent celebrity, because of the nature of the tragedy, was thrust into the public eye, specifically his relationship to fathering a girl was really in the public eye. And I think there's, you know, there's some narratives out there, not so much for Black men, but just in general with fathers and sons, you know, out there playing catch or whatever.
Yeah.
But that was really unique. I don't know if you remember, just felt like for the month after they passed, you know, there was so much media about and home videos of him teaching her basketball, them at the game with his arm around her shoulder, you know, him hoisting her up, and images that I had never seen before. Because when you think of Kobe, you think, you know, basketball championship, Mamba mentality, he's got a brand, and dad is not in the top 10 things when you think about his brand. And and in that moment, through that tragedy, dad became an important part of his legacy. And that really the center of his legacy, because, you know, of how that tragedy occurred with both of them passing away.
And
that was just, man, that and Hair Love, you know, at the same time, it was like just kind of astounding to me to see the media flooded with these images of nurturing Black fatherhood. And I wanted to add my voice to that chorus, to keep that movement and that story and that love in the center of the public imagination. So it was just, you know, the book is a part of that, and the song and the music, I'm working on a podcast. There's like everything that I do is about raising that, raising those voices and our stories.
Would you say, you know, you're obviously an incredibly accomplished musician, and let's say the albums have been on like just constantly, the beats, the sounds, the lyrics, it's all just fantastic. What kind of things are you keeping at the forefront of your mind when you're creating for that audience? Is there something in particular that you're like, you know what, these are the absolute non-negotiables when I'm writing this kind of stuff?
You know, I don't know if I approach it with a set of predetermined parameters. It's really the main instigator is inspiration, and I'm surrounded by it constantly with my kids. So like, you know, DAD came out in 2020. You know, the following, you know, that was the beginning of COVID. So I was still writing, still creating as DAD was being released, and, you know, thinking about on my next album, the one that was nominated for a Grammy, Black to the Future, the first single from that album is called Cootie Shot. It's about getting vaccinated. I didn't think to myself like, oh, this would be an important thing to do. It was really like, I have a needle phobia. I have since I was very little. I remember going to a camp one year, and we had to get a tetanus shot. Doctor comes out with this big old turkey baster, you know, and they had to hold me down. Like three nurses came in and held me down. Ah! I mean, it was like very traumatic. It was funny. Well, not funny, but you know, it's interesting about trauma. like to this day, I have a very serious fear of needles. And my wife kind of explained like the physiology behind trauma. It's like, you know, you have that flight or flight, you know, chemicals that are released, and something that happens to you when you're scared that you're trying to resist, it like gets seared into your nervous system. You know, we say like, oh, I'm nervous. Yeah. No, nervous is the name of a system that helps your body operate and survive. And I was flushed with adrenaline, heart pounding fear. Whatever was happening to me at that moment has been seared into my psyche. And that's the reason why to this day, I'm not, you know, my wife says, come get this spider, go get that snake. Like, I'm not scared of many things, but needles are one of those things that was a trauma I experienced at a young age. To this day, I can barely stand it. And so when it came time to get vaccinated, you know, I was more scared than my kids were. Like,
gosh,
you know? Yeah. And then I was like, man, I should probably get the Johnson & Johnson, you know, just one shot, you know, but the efficacy is about 15 points lower than the, you know, Pfizer or the, you know, Moderna. So anyway, I ended up getting the Pfizer, which, but anyway, I'm in my studio writing, thinking about all the other kids that have experienced this trauma, thinking about my inner kid who is scared to death of needles. And that's the first line of the song. I am scared of needles, but there's one thing that I know. You know, I don't want that fever. We can't get it hot if we catch the cold. Circle, circle, dot, dot. Now I got my cootie shot. It's about, it's a song about dealing with the fear of getting poked by a sharp thing and having a substance enter your body that your parents say is good for you, but you know, you haven't quite wrapped your head around why or how. You just know it's gonna hurt and that you have to do it. And I think that, like I said, as much as I would like to say I was trying to do my part as a creative citizen to encourage, no, like I was really coping with my own trauma and thinking of my inner child, and that was a party song, you know, that felt like something you could dance to, that you could, you know, lift your spirits to encourage you to summon the courage to do this thing, even though it's scary. Like that's Cootie Shot. That's where it came from. And pretty much, I'd have to think about that. I don't write many songs that don't come from an authentic experience or place like that. Another example, I run a studio in Durham called Black Space. We mentor Black teens. And a couple years ago, we did a conversation on consent. And, you know, it was Me Too era. And we were like, let's lead our youth conversation around consent. And we brought in a speaker, and it was really great. But as I'm seeing these kids kind of wrap their mind around these words and concepts that they hadn't really considered or hadn't discussed deeply before, I was like, man, you can't be talking to kids at 16 and mentioning the word consent for the first time at 16. Like, they need to know what consent means at a young age, you know, so that they can say no. So that they can know that people have body autonomy. Oh, what's body autonomy? Oh, that's just your body belongs to you. It's yours, nobody else's. So you mean I don't have to kiss Uncle Jerry when he says, hey, come here, give me a kiss? No, you can actually say, no, Uncle Jerry, I don't want to kiss. And Uncle Jerry can't say, no, come on, get over it. No, it's like, this is called boundary. Like, you know what I mean? Our kids need to have these tools. So by the time they're in high school and they're sexually curious or active, oh yeah, man, I know what consent is. Like, that's not something that I'm just being introduced to during sex ed. Like, cause it's not all about sex. Consent starts with hugs. It starts with your own personal space. And so go for it. Yeah.
So I found that track particularly powerful because I remember, you know, a father of daughters from a very young age, it didn't resonate with me.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
When I was saying, oh, you know, we're saying goodbye, go give grandma a hug, go give grandma a kiss. And then the kids would be like, oh, no, I'm like, no, it's your grandmother, go give her a kiss. And it was my wife who said to me, what are you teaching them? Stop. Think about what you're saying. And I was like, oh, man, I've never thought about that before. And then, you know, part of the parenting journey is you're learning all the time. And I was like, yeah, actually, she doesn't have to give grandma a kiss if she doesn't want to give grandma a kiss. And as your song says, you know, it's her body is her body and it's up to her. And you're absolutely right in terms of kind of the first time you're introduced to those concepts, like 16 is absolutely way too late.
Way late. But you know, and you know what? Grandma's going to, she'll get over it. Grandma will be fine. I don't want to kiss. They're going to say, oh, okay, little pumpkin. Well, you have fun. You know, like it's way more important that grandma feels a sliver of discomfort and does the work to earn the child's trust so that a kiss on the cheek is given with enthusiasm.
Yeah.
You know, than it is that we force them into these things because we don't want our elders to feel bad. Like, let's equip our kids with the tools they need to make choices that are affirming of their power. You know, a lot of being a kid is powerless. Do this, go there, eat that, you know, but their body is non-negotiable, you know, and that, you know, again, the concept for that came out of work I was doing with teens, wishing, like, just awestruck, really. Like, what's wrong with y'all boys? You know what I mean? Like, the questions that they had, the internalized patriarchy that they were already exuding at 14, 15, 16, I was like, man, we need to nip this in the bud way, way earlier. And, you know, again, every song on the album has a story like that, that comes out of either interpersonal experience, world observation, or like a, you know, a genuine, you know, fruit that grows out of the seeds we plant as we parent.
I want to talk a bit about your second album and this idea of Afrofuturism, because I'm a huge sci-fi fan.
Nice. But
I didn't really, not at a younger age, get into Star Trek. So lots of science fiction novels, of course, Star Wars. Who didn't love Star Wars? Mm-hmm. Incidentally, I've only just started watching the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm. And I'm watching all these stories going, I've read these stories before. I didn't realize this was cool now. Cause back then it was like, yeah, I read sci-fi in my room alone. But there's a great kind of homage to, LeVar Burton, in the album as well. So I'd love for you to just riff a bit about kind of I've seen you talk about him before, about what he meant to you, seeing him on TV growing up, but also just a bit more about this idea of what Afrofuturism is.
Sure. Well, LeVar Burton's a great place to start when you're talking about Afrofuturism, because, you know, it's this idea that, you know, Black people exist in the future. We can kind of create and manifest and participate in art, culture, science, technology. You know, we're a part of that narrative, because sometimes, you know, we get erased out of those spaces, and our vision of the future might look different, you know, than a vision that's being kind of painted by a white author or, you know, somebody that doesn't share our unique experiences and perspective. You know, I think of Harriet Tubman as like the quintessential Afrofuturist, because she lived during a time where enslavement was the standard. It's what everyone knew for as long as they'd lived. And here's a person who can paint the future with a different brush and actually created that future that she envisioned. Yeah. And so what if our present, if we think about, you know, taking on a Tubman-esque, you know, ethos, what does Black liberation look like for our generation? What things do we want to change, you know, around, you know, women having full and access to their reproductive organs or choices? That's an Afrofuturist vision, especially for people who didn't have that kind of autonomy, you know, for much of American history. This is from a Black American perspective. Like, it hits different, you know, for our community than it might for others because of our history. So anyway, that's what Afrofuturism is all about. And yeah, LeVar Burton, past, present, future, he's that guy. He is, you know, such a pioneer and visionary. And for those who don't know who LeVar Burton is, he's not like necessarily a household name for everyone that's not a super nerd like apparently we are, you know, but, you know, I wear nerd like a badge of honor ever since like Pharrell and the Neptunes, with the dopest producers in the world, called their band NERD. I was like, yes, we can own nerdiness without shame. Like, the coolest people in the world are nerds. So shouts to Pharrell. But anyway, LeVar Burton is an actor. He is a, you know, he's a wonderful actor. And there are kind of three or four places where he's most well known. He's done a whole lot, but he's most known as the host of Reading Rainbow, a popular PBS kids show, where he introduced young children to books. And I have several books in my bookcase that I saw first on Reading Rainbow, which is
wow,
public access television in the States. Where is Mufaro's Beautiful Daughters? Here it is. I collect children's books by Black authors and authors of color. I remember seeing this book, Mufaro's Beautiful Daughters, looking at the artwork on PBS as a kid. It's a beautiful story. And that was the show, Reading Rainbow. He played Kunta Kinte, the character Kunta Kinte, in the television show Roots, which was a story about enslavement in the United States. Really popular show, really popular book written by Alex Haley, who also, you know, co-authored Malcolm X's autobiography, and you know, really, really important book that tells this story that, you know, in the 70s had not really been told yet in television.
Yeah.
Groundbreaking show, and still occupies the public imagination. Like, what's his name? Kendrick Lamar, one of the biggest rappers, one of his singles off his Grammy winning album, To Pimp a Butterfly, was called King Kunta. Like, this idea of Kunta Kinte is still relevant in the 21st century. You know, the show came out in the 70s. And so he played the lead character, a boy who was enslaved. And he also played my favorite role of his was Geordi LaForge on Star Trek The Next Generation, who was the engineer on the Starship Enterprise. Smartest guy on the ship, was another nerdy black man. I'm looking for the action figure in my backpack, but it is not easily accessible. But
I'll buy you some time. So what I will say is my brother was hugely into TNG.
Nice.
So I used to kind of watch it with him. Like, he wouldn't miss a single episode, whereas I kind of floated in and out. So I saw my fair share of it. And I remember watching LeVar as Geordi LaForge and being like, just, you know, when you're just seen and you're mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, like that's who I would be. Wow, there he is.
There he is.
I mean, I feel like it's, so for anybody who's listening and not watching, you have got an action figure, which you fished from your backpack. This is another segue we need to kind of travel down in a minute. But I was going to say he's missing his
visor.
His visor, his kind of recognizable accessory.
Yeah. So for those who may not understand the shorthand you're using, TNG stands for The Next Generation. There's like 8 Star Trek shows out there. The best one is TNG, in my opinion. but the character, Geordi's character, is blind. He was born blind, and he wears this kind of electronic visor. It looks like some cool shades over his eyes. And yes, as you noted, the action figure I'm holding does not have glasses. That's because this action figure is from Star Trek Generations, the movie that came out when he got cybernetic eyes put in to replace the visor.
Wow.
So yeah, his eyes are little robots instead of the traditional visor that we associate with Geordi.
And how comes he's in your backpack? Is this common practice for you to just have an action figure of LeVar Burton as Geordi LaForge in your backpack?
Well, let me show you for your callers, we're on a Zoom call and I'm at home in my office and I'm reaching behind me here to gather some more friends. These are my action figures. I collect black action figures. I've got Storm here
We just had Storm come up into the camera there from X-Men.
Yeah, from the X-Men, from the Marvel Universe. Here's Lieutenant Commander Worf, also from Star Trek. Steel from the Man of Steel, who's a Superman guy.
So as you're looking there, has your Star Trek TNG fandom extended into learning Klingon via Duolingo yet?
Oh, I have not. I do have a friend who speaks Klingon.
Wow.
Her name is Walida Imarisha. She's a brilliant scholar and social activist and writer, but I do not speak Klingon. I know like 3 curse words and you know, I can generally kind of follow Klingon conversation, but I cannot speak it.
I mean, that's impressive enough, and I think that's kind of standard, is it, when you're learning any language, you got to learn hello, thank you, and then about 3 or 4 curse words.
Right Very important. Yeah, here's the 8 tails from Naruto. Yeah, I mean, I capture is what I was about to say. I meant collect. I capture black action figures. And the reason Geordi was in my backpack and not on my bookshelf is because this weekend I went to Washington, D.C. and was a part of the Kennedy Center Next 50, the Kennedy Center is a big cultural institution in the States, and they identified 50, kind of movers and shakers and who represent like the next 50 years. Oh, sorry, key point missing. The Kennedy Center is celebrating their 50th year, and it's named after President John F. Kennedy. So they picked 50 people who represent the next 50, like to get them to their 100-year, and it's a lot of dope people on there. Yara Shahidi, Esperanza Spalding is a wonderful jazz musician. You know, they're all kind of younger creatives and who will be shaping our culture of American culture in the, as we move forward into the future. And they asked us to, one of the activities we did in DC was take portraits. And they asked us to bring photos of people that inspire us so that, you know, when we take the photo, we're holding the picture of the person. And, you know, I'm different. So I didn't want to hold a photo. I brought an action figure of LeVar Burton's character, Geordie LaForge, for my portrait with the Kennedy Center. So that is why a Star Trek character was in my backpack. Normally, he lives on my bookshelf with my other toys. As you can see, I am still very much a kid in a lot of ways.
I mean, I've got a lot of office envy right now, just looking at your background. Tons of books, tons of cool action figures. Small selection of books in here. I don't know if you can see. I think your frame's too small. I've got a bass guitar on the wall.
Nice.
For easy access to practice. I got this kind of cool Lego guitar thing here. But yeah, yours is definitely winning.
Oh, thank you. My action figures are happy to be recognized.
So is LeVar Burton aware of kind of your extent of your fandom? Has he heard the track at all?
Yeah, man. You know, there's a lot on social media about manifesting, you know what I mean? And some of it is a little, you know, kind of eye-roll-y, like, but let me tell you, man, here's my manifesting story. So I wrote the song LeVar Burton, you know, with zero expectations that anyone close to LeVar would hear it. I just wrote it because I love his work. So somehow it kind of gets in the hands of his publicist and we hear back from his team that, oh, LeVar loves the song. That was the day that my mind exploded. And I was like, oh my God, LeVar Burton loves my song. Oh my God. So happy, so excited. Then, this is such a funny story. So LeVar's like, what was it? It was, this was before the Grammy nomination. So then the album gets nominated for a Grammy. Oh, a little more backstory. This was at a time when he was in the running to become the next host of Jeopardy.
I remember this. Yes.
So yeah, longtime Jeopardy host, Alex Trebek passed away a couple years ago. They've been looking for a new host. There's like this Black Twitter-led social media campaign to have LeVar Burton be the next host of Jeopardy. He's a guest host for a stint. So this was during this time. So that part's important. So, you know, we get the news of the Grammy nomination, super excited. I think that kind of bolsters our profile a bit. So now The song's out, LeVar Burton retweets the song, posted on his Instagram, posted on his Facebook. I died a second day. I was like, oh my God. LeVar Burton posted my song on his social media account. Lord, take me away right now. Hashtag life goals. Unbelievable, right? Then it is announced. So first of all, LeVar Burton was not selected as the host of Jeopardy. It was the biggest scandal ever. The guy who basically chose himself. He was like an executive producer of the show, chose himself as the host. And, you know, there was a big outcry over that. He ended up getting ousted like within a month of selecting himself. He got kicked off the show because people were looking into it. It was super sketchy. But then, you know, in the wake of all this, LeVar Burton's been kind of back in the public imagination again, and he got basically snubbed. LeVar Burton was chosen as the host of the pre-televised ceremony at the Grammys.
Wow.
So yeah, for those who don't know how the Grammys work, So there's like 100 Grammy categories, you know, everything from polka, classical music, but they only televise like the top 12 categories. So that's like a 3-hour ceremony. That's where you get your Justin Biebers and your Megan Thee Stallions and your Billie Eilishes. That all happens during the televise. But earlier in the day, that's when all the other genres are awarded, jazz and children's music. So I was nominated, coincidentally. My mom was also nominated this year. And the host who's introducing all the speakers is LeVar Burton. Who do they choose as one of the speakers? Me and my mom to be an announcer. So not only am I like, I'm gonna be backstage with LeVar Burton. He knows that the song exists. He's posted it on his social media. I'm telling my wife, like, oh my God, I'm so excited. I'm like, I'm gonna burst into tears as soon as I meet him. It's gonna be so great. So I'm backstage at the Grammys. You know, we've done our like rehearsal or whatever. I'm putting some mango and some kiwi on my plate, you know, trying to get some food on my stomach, but nothing heavy. And I hear this voice, Pierce Freelon. I turn around, there's LeVar Burton. And he's just like arms wide open, like, bring it in, buddy.
Oh,
came in,
wow.
Gave him a hug, shook his hand. And here I thought I was gonna be a hot mess. I was composed. I was like, Mr. Burton, it's such a pleasure to meet you. I was so cool. I was cool as a cucumber. He was the one tearing up. His eyes were full of tears. He was like, Pierce, that song. Just, I don't have words. Just thank you. Just the most sincere. I was like, look, man. Thank you for raising me and a generation of children with Reading Rainbow. Thank you for inspiring us on Star Trek. Thank you for telling us our history on Roots. Bro, like, we need to give you your flowers because you've changed so many lives. It was just a love fest, okay? It was a love fest. And then he introduced us. When me and my mom came on to do our presenting, which is, you can see it on YouTube, he's like, Pearson, Nina Freelon. And he's talking a bit about our background. And he's like, Pierce wrote this song called LeVar Burton. I just can't. You know, and then he introduces us. It was like out of a dream. Could not have asked for a more spectacular moment. And it's up there, man. One of the best experiences of my life. So dope. And totally manifested it. You know what I mean? Like when I wrote LeVar Burton, you know, a year or two prior, like had no idea that he would be in the running for the Jeopardy thing, which would, you know, ignite him back into the middle of the public imagination, that I would be nominated for a Grammy and that he of all people would be selected to host the ceremony. It just felt like divine. And so he knows about it. He knows about it. He loves it.
Man, I mean, I have so many other things that I wanted to ask you, but I feel that's just the most perfect place for us to end. Before we sign off, what's happening next and where can people find out more about you?
Wow. Well, thank you for your time and your energy today, brother. It's just been a pleasure. You know, my name is Pierce Freelon, and that's where you can find all my things. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, my website, all of it is just P-I-E-R-C-E, like Pierce Your Ear, Freelon, freelon.com/whatever. And so, that's where you can find out what I'm up to. I'm working on a podcast right now with PBS Kids, which is wild. We're just talking about Mr. PBS Kids.
Yeah, LeVar Burton. Absolutely.
It's their first children's podcast in the history of, you know, the company. They do, you know, they're responsible for Sesame Street. They've done all this really great kids programming. You know, Mr. Rogers is a PBS show, and their first ever kids podcast. It's wild. So that'll be coming out next year. I've been writing for television. I can't talk about what yet until a little bit later, but I'm working on a couple different TV projects. I'm working on my next album and my next book, Daddy and Me Side by Side, will be coming out next year. It's illustrated by Nadia Fisher and will be released with Little Brown Books for Young Readers. So, man, it is just an abundance of riches in the children's space and the fatherhood space that I'll be creating from. So feeling really blessed and excited to share these stories with the world and the different mediums of TV, podcasts, music, and books.
Well, I'm excited as well. I'm sure our listeners and viewers are going to be very excited as well. Until then, Pierce, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Dope Black Podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.